Well, hello, everyone. It's time for another edition of Crime Wave, the podcast featuring mystery, thriller, and suspense authors and the stories behind their stories. Crime Wave is part of the Authors on the Air network with over 4 million listeners worldwide. I'm Bonner Spring, and my guest today is the amazing Ellie Griffiths. Ellie is the USA Today best-selling author of The Ruth Galloway and The Brighton Mystery Series, as well as standalone novels, The Postscript Murders, Bleeding Heart Yard, and The Stranger Diaries, which was the winner of Edgar for Best Novel. Ellie is a recipient of the Crime Writers Association Dagger in the Library Award and the Mary Higgins Clark Award, both of which are awesome. She lives in Brighton, England, and I am delighted to welcome you to Crime Wave, Ellie.
Hello, I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're visiting us today to talk about your new mystery, The Last Word, which was released in England at the end of January to rave reviews and arrives in the US on April 23rd. It is a book that book lovers will absolutely adore. I'd like to get to know a little bit more about you first, though. Would you start by giving our listeners a little of your backstory?
Oh, well, that's lovely. I'm Ellie. I'm Ellie Griffiths. It's not my real name, though. So my real name is Domenica De Rosa, which weirdly sounds exactly made up. But in fact, it is my real name. I'm half Italian. My dad was Italian. Always wanted to write before I knew what a book was, really. I was putting together little picture books and things. I wrote my first crime novel when I was 11. It was called The Hair of the Dog, which must have been something my parents talked about a lot. I don't think I really understood the meaning of the hair of the dog in the sense that, you know, it's the if you had too much to drink the night before, you should have a drink at breakfast, that sort of thing. But I think I did understand the kind of revenge aspect of it. So I wrote this book when I was 11. It wasn't very good, but it kind of showed, you know, what I was reading, which was probably Agatha Christie. Always wanted to be a writer, read English at university. Then I worked in a library for a while. Eventually went to work for a publishing company, worked as an editor at HarperCollins, but didn't get my first book written, really, until I was on maternity leave expecting my twins. And I have twins who are 25. And in fact, they'll be 26 on the day before this book comes out, on the 22nd of April. So I guess I was on maternity leave and I suddenly realised that what I really wanted to do was not just edit a book. I don't mean just edit, because editors are wonderful, but actually write one. So I wrote my first book, which is called The Italian Quarter, and it was published as Domenica De Rosa. And I published four other books under that name. And then I had an idea for a crime novel, which became The Crossing Places, the first Ruth book. And my editor, no, it was my agent. My agent said to me, this is crime. You need a crime name. And I think what she meant by that was that Domenica De Rosa sounded like a romantic author. And my first books had been romance in a way. But also, I think it was that Domenica De Rosa sounded made up. So she wanted me to make up a name that sounded more real. So I chose Ellie Griffiths because it was my grandmother's name. And so then I became Ellie Griffiths. Crossing Places was my first crime novel. I thought it might be my last. Thought I might only be Ellie for that one book. But The Last Word, the book that comes out in April, is actually my 30th crime novel.
That is the best introduction I have ever heard to anyone. And you're absolutely right. Domenica De Rosa is so romance, so incredibly romance.
It sounds like you're singing when you say it. You know, I remember when I used to answer the phone at work and I'd say, it's Domenica De Rosa. And they'd think, what are you making that noise for? Why don't you say your name? So it is a lovely name. And I always thought it would be my writery name, but it has proved not so.
It is what it is. And as Ellie Griffith, let's see, the last word is approximately your 30th novel. Am I right with
that? Yes.
Excellent. That means that you win the prize for the most prolific author I've interviewed on Crime Wave. So thank you very much for that. Oh. Now, about half of your books are from the wonderful Ruth Galloway series, and there are many more from the Brighton series. But The Last Word piggybacks on two of the standalones that I mentioned in your bio, three minor characters from the Postscript Murders. Edwin, Natalka, and Benedict have become the protagonist in The Last Word. How did that happen, Ellie?
Well, as you say, Edwin and Benedict and Natalka were all there in the Postscript murders, which is starts with the death of a woman in sheltered accommodation on the south coast of England. And people think it's very sad, but they don't think it's suspicious because she's in her 90s. But then they find out that the dead woman was actually a murder consultant. And her job was thinking up murders for crime writers, based on my Auntie Marge, I have to tell you, Bonner, who actually did that for me. So the woman's carer, who's called Natalka, thinks it's suspicious. So she really starts investigating the murder. So that's where she comes from. Benedict's her friend who runs a coffee shop. And Edwin was a neighbour of Peggy's, who was the lady who died in sheltered accommodation. So you know how sometimes you have characters and you're pretty sure you're going to come back to them. And even though they didn't really feature in Bleeding Heart Yard, which was the next book to feature the detective, Arbinder Kaur, I sort of always knew they would come back. And this book, I wanted to focus on Edwin and Natalka, who now run a detective agency. And Edwin says he's the oldest sleuth in Britain. That's his proud claim to fame. But Benedict's a little unsure about joining the detective agency, but he supplies them with coffee and lots of good ideas. And in this book, Edwin and Benedict have to go undercover as writers to a writer's retreat. And that's right up Benedict Street. So they were characters I always thought I'd come back to. And it's funny how sometimes you have characters who work really well in the book and you like them, but you know you're not going to come back to them. But I always thought I would come back to these three.
Well, that's really nice. They're an amazing, it make me think of like the Three Amigos. I mean, they're just, they work so well. They work so well together. I've heard it said before that secondary characters are the ones that you can have fun with. You know, they don't have to have the serious character arc. They don't have to discover anything. They don't necessarily have to get in a huge amount of trouble either, correct? But they can be fun. They can be the cute coffee shop barista. They can be anything that you want them to be. Well, I'm glad that they came back. Now, Natalka is a Ukrainian refugee in England. Now, considering how long it takes to write and polish and then publish a novel, her character must have been in your head well in advance of the current troubles in Ukraine, right?
Yes. Yes, I mean, that's true. And in fact, it's a strange thing because I wrote The Postscript Murders in 2018, which was before the current, before the invasion, before the Russian invasion. Yeah. But of course, there had already been an invasion in 2014. So, and any Ukrainian would tell you the situation's been going on long before that. So it is quite strange, though, in a way that I made a Ukrainian in one of those sort of arbitrary, writery way. I wanted her to have a reason why she couldn't go home. I wanted there to be a reason why her brother could have been a prisoner of war and could possibly have been exchanged for Russian prisoners. So that had to be part of the plot of The Postscript Murders. So really, that's why I decided on her being Ukrainian. But when I thought about writing this sequel, of course, the current terrible situation in Ukraine was then happening. So I knew that had to be part of her story. But actually, another really strange thing happened. So my sister, who is the kind of wonderful person who does the wonderful things that we all say we're going to do, but speaking about myself, don't do, but she does them. She sponsored a Ukrainian woman to come from Ukraine and come and live in Britain. Oh. So she lives with her. And I'm very close to my sister, both, you know, emotionally and geographically. So she just lives down the road. So this lovely young Ukrainian woman, who's the same age as my children, who's called Daria, came to live with Julia. And so, of course, Daria is now part of our family. And in fact, The Last Word is dedicated to her. But the very strange thing is, and I have told her this, so it's okay, is that Daria is actually very like Natalka, who I had created years before I knew her. I mean, Daria is also blonde and beautiful. I can say that. She is a maths whiz like Natalka. She loves yoga like Natalka. She's very forthright like Natalka. So it's kind of the Natalka that you're seeing in The Last Word must be a combination of the original Natalka and Daria. So it is a very strange thing, but I do hope that in a way the Ukrainian backstory, and it's very strong in this book because Natalka's mom has come to live with her, and her brother is fighting on the front line, as is Daria's. So those things have to come to be part of the book. And I suppose make a sort of solemn backdrop for some of the lighter escapades.
That's true. Now, without giving any spoilers to the listeners who will not have had a chance to read this yet when your interview comes up on the air, let's get into the puzzle, the crime that the trio is investigating in The Last Word.
Yes, well, it starts with Edwin, who I've said earlier thinks of himself as the oldest sleuth in Britain. And he does his morning routine, which is a bit of yoga and some porridge. And then he does Wordle, which is a word game we have here. Do you have it in the States?
Honestly, I start my morning with the New York Times puzzles. And yes, we do Wordle. And I was actually telling my granddaughter yesterday, I was doing it, showing her, and I've done 758 Wordles.
Oh, you win. I've done 500 and something.
Oh, yes, I win.
You win. But of course, how silly of me, because it's the New York Times Wordle, isn't it? So of course it's in the States.
Well, anyway. No, but it started out in England.
Oh, did it?
Okay. Yeah, pre-New York Times. I mean, I started doing it before the Times had it, and it's a lovely addition to my day. I have a group of people I share it with, not with everybody. I don't put it on Facebook anymore, that kind of thing. But yes, Edwin is one of us.
Yes, he is. He starts his day with yoga and Wordle and porridge, much as I do. And then he goes to the coffee shop run by Benedict and he reads the obituaries. And he quite likes doing this in a sort of slightly morbid way, I think. But he starts to notice a pattern, which is that the obituary writers seem to be dying, predeceasing the object of the obituary. So that starts him thinking. And then his detective agency that he runs with Natalka they're asked to investigate the death of a local writer, a romance writer called Melody Chambers. And the trail, both of Melody's death and that of the obituary writer, seems to lead to a writer's retreat in Battle, which is near Hastings, obviously named after the Battle of Hastings. So Edwin and Benedict go on retreat to this writer's retreat, pretending to be writers, but really trying to find out what happened to these people. And while they're there, there's another murder. So it's a book about crime, about murder, but it's also a book about reading and about words as well.
Absolutely. There was so much wonderfulness in the description. I shouldn't have said it that way. I love the description of the writer's retreat. Is there by any chance a story where the wonderful snark about the writer's retreat came from?
I don't know. I'm afraid there probably is a little bit of snark in there. I mean, I've never been on a writer's retreat, I have to say, though I do teach creative writing at a beautiful old house in Sussex called Westdean, which probably was the inspiration for the house in The Stranger Diaries, actually. But I have to say, none of my students are anything like the students in this book, and I've had some really wonderful students. But I think it probably does cover the experience of being in a kind of isolated house and being concerned with stories and writing. And yes, it's quite fun to have a little laugh at people who think that crime novels aren't real books, which sometimes people do say. You do get people saying, I read your book and then I read a really good book. And you think, oh, well, good for you. That's great. So it was quite fun to have a little bit of fun at that expense. And I really did enjoy the writing exercises, some of which I actually do with my students. But equally, I know the feeling of when you're asked to write something, not being able to think of a single word. And that happens to Benedict as well. So I think probably some of it is from my own writing experience.
That's right. Well, you sort of led into something I wanted to ask you about, mysteries. As they regularly feature dead bodies, people mourning them, someone who killed them. They can be rather dark stories, but you temper the darkness with a very deft hand at humor. How do you do that?
Oh, thank you so much. That's a really lovely thing to say. And I love it when people say that my books do make them laugh, because obviously they're crime novels and I'm very much treat death and murder very seriously. I'm like Poirot, who always says he doesn't approve of murder. Well, I don't either. But I also do like people to laugh and to find them funny. And I do think it's quite important, really, to sort of leaven that with a little bit of humour. And you see that even in Macbeth, there are jokes, aren't there? There's the comic Porto who comes in just after the murder of Duncan and makes everyone laugh. But he makes everyone laugh, but he also underlines the point and he gives us a few clues. And something I've learned as a crime writer is you can disguise a clue in a joke. So I sometimes do that. So I do like to do both. I like to have the sort of light and dark. And when the book came out in England, I was interviewed in Norwich Cathedral, which was wonderful, by the Dean of Norwich Cathedral. And I was a little worried about this because he's kind of an important clergyman and this is, you know, crime novel. But he was so nice. And he said a really interesting thing, I thought. He said, as a clergyman, I really like crime novels because they're about life and death. And I thought, that's true, really, isn't it? And he was kind enough to say that he thought that I did, you know, deal with them seriously in this book, which I hope I do.
That's great. That's a lovely insight too. It's about life and death. And also in crime novels, it's quite common for the murder to be solved. In other words, you know, it does not go unpunished. There's justice in the world.
That's right. And I think it might be why we like crime fiction so much, really, because there is, there is something terrible happens. The status quo is disrupted, but there is resolution, isn't there? And usually justice is restored. And I think that could be why we do find them comforting in a way.
I agree with you with that. Something I've always wanted to learn. I always want to learn when I talk with mystery writers is how carefully do you plot your books out, Ellie?
Well, I started off plotting quite carefully. So I used to do like a sort of chapter plan, but it would only be like a few lines per chapter. But I would go all the way through the book. And so I would know who died and who killed them, really. But then when I wrote my first standalone, which I think you mentioned at the beginning, it was The Stranger Diaries, which was quite a sort of diversion for me, really, in that it's a modern gothic novel. It's told in three different voices. It's very complicated. But for that, I didn't write anything down. And for me, that kind of helped. It sort of helped me be a little bit looser and freer, I think, with the plotting. Maybe writing things down in a sort of chapter plan had made my plotting a bit linear. Something happens and something else happens and something else happens. But doing it in this way, having a completely blank canvas, not even having a canvas, meant that I was able to just be a little bit more labyrinthine with the plotting, be a little bit trickier. And I think that helped. And I read a really good description of that by the author, E.L. Doctorow. And he said that writing like that was like driving in the dark with your headlights on. You can only see a bit of the road, but you can make the whole journey like that. And that was a real breakthrough for me, really. So since that moment, I haven't written anything down. So I haven't been much of a planner, haven't had a written plan. Sometimes I don't know who did it or why. And even in this book, I did change that a couple of times, change the culprit a few times. So I'm now getting used to working in this slightly more relaxed way.
Wow, that's fascinating. Do you ever get stuck when you're plotting that way? Or I should say not plotting that way?
Yes, I think so. I think probably the drawback is you do get stuck a bit more, really, or that you have to change things a bit more. But when I do, I kind of have the characters talk to each other and say things like, well, what's happening? And the other one says, well, I think this is happening. And that bit of dialogue might not stay in. But it sort of helps me anchor myself to actually what's happening at that point. Or I go back to the very beginning. I have a niece who's a barrister, which makes me feel very old, but she's a barrister. And she says that a barrister's job in court is to tell the story from a different point. So the police will tell the story from the crime. But the barrister will often start at a different place. So sometimes if I'm stuck, I'll start at a totally different place. Like what happened when A met B 50 years ago? What happened then? And that's where the whole story flowed from. So I've got a few techniques now. I wish I could say that having written 30 books, it was getting easier, but it's not. But I suppose I've learned a couple of tricks along the way.
I hope that all the authors who are listening to this show have paid particular attention to that. That was really, really excellent advice. Now, I understand that maybe you're writing something new. Is there anything that you can share with us about what's new?
Yes, well, the first thing that I've got coming out actually are some short stories, which are coming out in the UK in June and in the US in October. And they're just a selection of short stories that I've collected over the years and some new ones. So there's actually a story about the first day when Harbinder Kaur comes to Shoreham CID. There's a story about Max Mephisto from The Brighton Mysteries, the first time he makes a woman disappear. And there is a Ruth and Nelson story that takes up their story after The Last Remains, which was the last book. So that's kind of the next thing I've got coming out. But yes, I'm actually working on a new book, which will be out next year, and it's called The Frozen People. And I really hope it'll be the start of a new series. And it's set in London, and it involves a detective called Ali, who is working on cold cases. And the joke in her unit is that they're so cold, they're almost frozen. And that's why they're the frozen people. But in fact, they are so cold because they travel in time to solve them.
Oh, come on. That is awesome. I can't
thank
wait.
You.
That's delightful.
Thank
wow.
You.
Okay. Now, before we go off the air, can you tell our listeners where you're most active online, where they can find you?
Oh, and please do contact me because I love hearing from readers. So I am on Twitter as Ellie Griffiths. I'm on Instagram as EllieGriffiths17, or you can talk to me on my Ellie Griffiths Facebook page. And I love to hear from you. I'm on TikTok too, but that's mainly pictures of my cat.
Thank you so much. Now, Ellie, you have one of the best author websites I've ever visited. And it's a good place for all of you guys listening to learn about a bunch of things that either weren't particularly relevant to The Last Word, which we're mainly talking about today, or other things. Like, for example, all the archaeological research you did for the Roth Gallery books. It's a wonderful website, highly recommend. Yeah. So Ellie, thank you for taking the time to visit today. Best wishes for tremendous success with The Last Word and for all these lovely things coming out in the future. I do hope you'll come back to visit.
I'd love to. Thank you. I've loved chatting to you. Thank you.